99, proceeded.
Redbird Sports Talk. Interviews and professional sports news all in one place.
Redbird's playing a lot on the outside. Open three for Poindexter. Got it.
The quarterback just couldn't figure out the passing game.
You're listening to Red Zone, only on 103.3 WZND. Blasting off in 3, 2, 1.
Happy Thursday, Birds, and this edition of the Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. Mikey Fernelli, Braden Fogerson, Benjamin Hootie, coming at you live from the ZND studio, where we have a special edition here for you today. We're going to get an interview coming up in the second segment. But first, the Redbird volleyball team. Dare I say it? Ben would get mad at me and my Cubs fandom over the summer when I would say a certain word about a team that eventually missed the playoffs in the Chicago Cubs. So I won't say it because I don't want to haunt them, but
We're back.
They might be back. They might be back is the whole bottom line. And why don't you guys take it from me? Take the mic and tell me what's the case as Ben wags a finger. Tell me what's going on with this Redbird volleyball squad.
They've won 4 games in a row. Everything seems to be clicking right now for the girls, and that's huge, especially because talked about it earlier in the year. Tough schedule to start the year. And it's not, and it really hasn't gotten easier. They're playing some pretty hard conference opponents, and they're winning right now. 4-2 in conference. It's all very positive right now. Super exciting stuff, especially considering the team is on the younger side.
Not to mention 11 straight sets heading into this homecoming weekend. Ooh. You've got a whole lot of volleyball to be played, and it's all going to be here on WZND as well here. A bunch of home matches, including Bradley on Monday. If you're going to get a Monday matchup, it better be Bradley, because that's going to get people in seats. People want to see that matchup. But 3 doable matches. Murray State, you already beat once. Belmont, you already swept once. And Bradley, if I remember correctly from last year, were horrendous. So 3 very doable matches. Murray State went to 5 sets, so Murray State is not going to be very easy. But everything here is definitely doable.
If you don't remember, the Redbird volleyball team started 0-9 on the season. They then finally got 2 wins in the Capital Credit Union Classic, their final weekend of out-of-conference play. Those wins were against St. Thomas and Green Bay, so they did what the Bears couldn't. And then moving on to the conference season, they faced Drake and UNI to start, and they fell in 7 sets to those 2 Iowan teams, before finally getting a conference win against Murray State and Belmont on the road, 2 in a row, and then since then have cultivated a 4-game streak in which they've put together 4 wins and, yeah, only 2 set losses in those 4. So they really have completely turned it around. We talked about this weeks ago. We said this could all change in conference, and their overall record doesn't really matter in the conference standings. They're 4-2 in conference, which is good for near the top of the conference.
I think what's more impressive in it all is the fact that they played essentially a doubleheader from Friday to Saturday and swept 2 really good teams that are both above 500 on the season. And, yeah, I mean, I guess the only direction is up right now, considering that you got a couple teams that you've already beat. So definitely something to keep your eyes on as we move forward. I don't think we were expecting to talk much about them this year, considering the way they started the season. But, I mean, it's always exciting when you have a really good team.
Well, and I think it was easy to criticize, or not criticize, but, like, what Allie was saying when they were 0-9 was a lot of, we're seeing the things we need to see. It's going to click. Things are coming together. Like, I'm starting to see the things we need to see. And you're like, yeah, is that coach talk when you're 0-9, or is that truly what she was seeing? And it's starting to look like maybe she was seeing the right things. Maybe that's where the frustration stemmed from, not being 0-9, but knowing they were so close to getting over the edge, and then the schedule lines up at the right time where they could just run through a schedule. I mean, you got, as Fogerson pointed out, you got Belmont, Murray State here this weekend. Then they stay home and face Bradley on Monday. So they got easy 3 wins in this weekend and change if they choose to do so.
Yeah, and also, you know, going back to that 0-9 stretch, like, I myself felt like they weren't completely missing, like, so much, like, glaringly bad. Everything, you know, you had certain sets that were super close that you couldn't just close the deal. You had certain good runs that, you know, might not have led to a win of a set, or at least not a win of a match. But you certainly saw flashes of the team playing real well. And now that you're back in conference play and getting a little bit of that feel for how this team works when they're feeling good about themselves, That seems to have been all the difference that this volleyball team needed to look a lot better heading into this weekend.
I'm looking at this screen right now, and seeing them 0-5 at home, that's pretty weird to look at, just considering how rowdy and how home field advantage could come into play in the Missouri Valley Conference. So you got to take at least 2 of 3 this weekend just to kind of – not only to show everyone that you are – like they are truly a good team when they match up against their conference opponents, but – just to break that streak, and I think it'll be a big weekend for them, especially because I think you could expect bigger crowds since it is homecoming weekend. So I think a lot of exciting stuff on the way for this team.
All three of those matches will be here on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, including Braden on the Saturday match and myself on the Monday match. And we'll throw it across the field and say, as one team goes up, another team loses steam. And Ben Hootie was on the call with Mr. Julian Voss on Saturday as the ISU football team fell by 19 points to a team that hasn't lost in over a year in the South Dakota State Jackrabbits. We expected this, Ben, but I think it was still a bit annoying and frustrating after the hot start to lose so handedly.
Yeah, and it's not even that. The box score is not, like, I just don't think that makes up what the game truly was. The game felt very... It felt much different than the score truly says, because, you know, Jackrabbits get out to a 34-14 lead to open up the first half. And while that's 20 points, it didn't necessarily feel that way because the offense was clicking on all cylinders in that first half. They just didn't really get chances because of costly turnovers on special teams. There was a muffed kick that ended up allowing the Jackrabbits to get it at their own 10-yard line. So then you get over to the second half, and it's almost like the narrative completely flipped, because then it was only the defense only allowed 6 points in that second half, so they showed up, but the offense just went extremely cold. And there were some other things as well. I don't know if you guys want to chime in, but couple decisions that I definitely want to talk about, but you guys could go ahead and put your input.
Yeah, no, before you say that, because I'm sure you'll know a lot better than me, I do want to ask, for both sides, were starters kind of starting to get taken out of the game in the second half?
No, they've kept even South Dakota State. I mean, they pulled their running back. He went the entire way. His name was Isaiah Davis. He went absolutely ballistic.
198 yards, 2 TDs.
Their entire run game just torched Illinois State up. Both teams kept their foot on the gas basically the entire way, and the only starter that was pulled was Davis, and that was just the last possession for South Dakota State.
Mason Blakemore, Cole Mueller, both with 6 and 9 attempts respectively. 1 touchdown for Blakemore. Zach Anixted, our friend of the pod, 26 for 33, 162, and a touchdown in the air. Daniel Sobkowitz also with a touchdown on what I'm assuming was a Philly special,
yeah,
which is good to see. But how did our friend Zach do following his Red Zone interview? It looks like the stats show that he still had a pretty solid game.
Oh, yeah. It was. I think it was more of the fact that the run game couldn't really develop. So for what Anixted was out there, I mean, you see right there, 26-33. He looked pretty good for the most part. I think it was just more the offense just kind of went cold in the second half after a really hot start.
Looking at the receiving numbers for the Redbirds, a number of receivers kind of staying in the game. I think that's been something they've done all year long. I like the resurgence of Eddie Casper so far this season, 35 yards, 8 receptions in the game against South Dakota State. But, Ben, I think looking forward to this weekend's game, which will also be here on the Pulse of Redbird Nation against Indiana State, I think the Redbirds have a lot to be confident about following this game and getting back on the right track in the homecoming game and getting, you know, the last game of what you'd call a homestand in baseball.
Yeah, I don't think Indiana State's won a game yet this year, so this is definitely I wouldn't necessarily say tune-up, because obviously anything could happen in conference play, especially kind of coming off a loss, but it could get you on the right track again after you got roughed up a little bit by South Dakota State. So just go back to what we know, as in get that run game going early and play really good defense.
Yeah, let's talk about Indiana State. 0-5 on the season. They got blanked 27-0 to Eastern Illinois, who is one of ISU's other losses this season, one of 2 losses. They blanked Indiana State 27-0. They went on to face Indiana, yes, Big Ten Indiana. I remember that game, actually, in which they lost 41-7. There was a bet on that game on DraftKings I remember seeing that was Indiana. I want to say Indiana minus like 30 or something, and that obviously was a good one. Ball State, 45-7 in Muncie. And then Murray State, it was a much closer game, 30-28, before Northern Iowa within a touchdown as well, 27-20. So Indiana State's been scoring a lot more recently, but they still are over 5 on the season against an ISU team that has put up a lot of fight and has a really stellar defense.
I'll say this. I think at its core, Illinois State has a really good football team. I think they have a good program. I think they're all the right pieces are there. I think it's more just there's some decision making. There's some things. Sometimes a coin just doesn't flip their way. And I think if they could just fix up on some of the mistakes, I think that they could truly be a really good football team for the stretch of the season.
Moving on to, you know, past this homestand, they got Youngstown State on October 21st. Then they're back home. It's kind of a fun schedule. They've been home for 3 weeks and the bye, so they've been home for a month. And then they go on the road once to Youngstown, Ohio, and then they're back again against Northern Iowa. That shakes out where they're going to have some more away games here towards the end, but they're not on the road multiple weeks in a row. They have Northern Iowa at home, then they go to Springfield, Missouri for Missouri State. They're back against Murray State on November 11th, final home game, before finishing it out in Grand Forks, North Dakota, at North Dakota. Braden, what are your thoughts? You've been sitting there on this ISU football team.
Well, first of all, I've been scanning MVFC football statistics.
Oh, I knew you were doing some research. That's why.
To try and figure something that Indiana State's good at, and I haven't
been able
to do that.
That's why you said your name.
This stat might seem obscure, but point after touchdowns, they are 6-for-6, which is the best in the conference.
Hmm.
But they are the only team in the conference with single digit point after touchdown attempts in total, because they have scored so little touchdowns.
So the sample pool is
less. Chances. I think that tells you, I mean, they're bottom three in offense and defense. They have the worst offense and bottom three in defense. They're really, really not good at football. And so I think you not only need to win, but you need to like really show. I mean, it's hard to imagine something that would be super impressive to do against a team like this, but also it's easy to imagine things that could be really embarrassing to allow to happen against a team like this. So, I don't know. It's just, it's going to have to be won, and you're probably going to have to gain, you know, some rest or some experience, some ideas that you throw out in terms of plays that you see if you like or not. There's got to be something that you can gain other than just one more notch in the win column.
Trying to see what they're opening at. Okay, it says Illinois State. No, that can't be true. They don't really pay attention to that for these odds, at least, because this is saying Indiana State is favored for the running odds on this random website.
How many people are betting this?
That's true, and that's true too. I don't really think they really take much in this MVFC FCS into account, because that should not be the case. But just based on record alone. I don't know if anyone else can find another source that tells me otherwise, but that seems to be wrong, that they open it up at Indiana State minus 13.5. That's two touchdowns for an 0-5 team against a team that's 3-2 and has played pretty decent football. I don't know. When we come back, we're going to hear a lot about the Illinois State golf team coming up on the Red Zone. Welcome back to the Red Zone. Mikey Fernelli, Braden Fogersman, and Ben Hootie, joined by Val Pugnier from the Illinois State golf team. Did I do your last name fine there?
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
All right, we're going to try. We're going to keep going throughout. out of France to the ISU golf team, all the way from France to Normal, Illinois. I know you've been around for a couple years, but how different of just like, I mean, we'll get into it in the interview, but it's just got to be a completely different culture, right?
Well, yeah, it's a culture shock. It's real different. The way people like just the language was tough for me. It was tough to pick up, because when I first got here, I could barely talk English, and I had my first year in South Carolina, and people had like an extremely strong country accent,
right,
which was even tougher for me.
No. And so did you learn English within that country accent
space?
That
country accent, yeah.
So I'm surprised you don't speak with an English country accent.
No, I learned English from my golf team, two guys from London.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Let's go over the resume real fast. All MVC last season, MVC Golfer of the Week four times. A low round of 65 in 2022. I can't even imagine. I played last Friday and I had like a 50 something on 9. I don't know how you get a 65 in 18. Just I respect it so much. All of us do. None of us are great golfers. I enjoy playing.
I've never played golf.
Oh, yeah, I enjoy playing, but
don't even ask me.
Yeah,
what
Ben, I know you don't really play.
I mean, all the other sports I've tried, I was bad at. So I was like, I'm not gonna.
I'm the opposite. I'm terrible at all the other sports. I just wanted to try golfing. I could be okay at it. I've had decent rounds, but more often than not, just terrible. When did you get into golf? Was it from a young age in France, or when did you get into it?
Well, I started pretty late. I was 13 years old, something like that. I just watched like a cartoon, Bugs Bunny. It's not the funniest story, but yeah. Watched Bugs Bunny play golf. I was like, sounds cool. And then I just picked up. It's kind of a weird story, but yeah, that's where I started.
That's awesome. It was just a Looney Tunes cartoon?
I was watching like French cartoon, and Bugs Bunny was on it. I was like, oh, sick.
The sport was cool.
Then here I am.
Was there other sports in your childhood that, you know, you knew you were athletic and you could try it? Or was it just always golf from that age?
I'll be honest. I'm from like a really geek family. So we played video games. My dad, we still do. I didn't play that much sport. I played soccer because I'm French. It's kind of like a thing. But no, not really. Golf was the only thing.
Is that where it kept you competitive? Is that how you learned to compete, by playing against your family members, doing stuff like that?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, my dad was tough on me for that. He never let me win. He would never let me win at any game. Like, he would be no matter what. So, yeah, I've always been like, I would say I hate losing. Like, I feel like every athlete. And, yeah, my dad wasn't nice to me.
So you said 13 years old. At what point did you realize that, like, you had the special talent and you could go pretty far with it?
I wouldn't say I realized that I had like a special talent. I would just say like when I hit my first ball, I looked at my dad. We were on the range in south of France. I looked at him and was like, wow, I want to do that. And then I picked up. It was right away.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you were theoretically born with just that ability, I guess, right? If that's what you're saying.
It's a lot of work.
Well, yeah.
To be fair. It's obviously a lot of work. I work a lot. I've been working my whole life. And I love... The thing is, I love doing that. So it doesn't seem to me like a work. Just like I go play, and I'm happy to play. I'm happy to practice.
It's still an investment, though, right? Like doing, like buying clubs and going and traveling. Obviously, you're in a completely different country now. Being a college student, what is that? How does that work for you? That you're able to sustain. What must be a pretty hard sport to be able to sustain yourself doing?
Yeah, it's not easy. It's a lot of sacrifice, not gonna lie. So I went to like a special school for like people who want to do sport. So I wasn't like I left my home when I was 15. So like to go to a special like kind of like high school for like sport. It's expensive. Clubs are expensive, not gonna lie. They're really expensive. So it's a lot of sacrifices. My parents did a lot for me, and thanks God they're here.
Yeah.
It would be tough. That's it. It's not easy, but we're making it.
Yeah. My brother at a lower level plays college golf at Augustana in Division III. And so a lower level, but still college golf. And I've found when I play with him, he doesn't enjoy it as much anymore, like during the summer and stuff. Like he'll just like, he's there. He only wants to focus on getting better. Like he won't like have a drink or like hang out like during that while we're golfing. He just won't enjoy it. Like, is that how you are when you golf with your friends like during the summer, or can you still just like sit back and enjoy golf in like the leisurely sense?
Well, I'm really lucky to be like a member at my home course. I have a lot of friends and I always play with them. I enjoy playing golf. It seems weird because I'm a college student, I'm an athlete, and that's my job. But no, I enjoy it. I enjoy it every day.
That's great to hear. Because I think a lot of athletes, especially in a sport like golf, get so in their head and get so into getting better that they just can't still enjoy it, the game that it is. So that's awesome to hear.
It kind of was. It's not always easy. Like now it seems to be easy because, well, I played well last week and all of that. But yeah, last spring, for example, was really tough for me. Yeah. And I'm in college. I'm a college athletic. I have like responsibilities. I have pressure because I need to have results. I need to perform. So when you don't do that, it's getting a little more in my head. But no, now I enjoy it and I take that as a work, but as a pleasure as well.
So tell me a little bit about your teammates, too, because obviously no matter how well you do, the final score of a tournament is also dependent on your teammates. And teammates like Alex McCullough, for example, have also been playing real well. Tell me a little bit about, you know, how it is being able to have teammates that you get to talk to, hang out with, and, you know, maybe even form friendships with.
I am really lucky to have my teammates. I cannot dream about a better team. They're all awesome. Alex is having a hell of a fall, not gonna lie. He's playing really good. He's a really good player. He's like, he's really talented. And the great part of him is like having like teammates like him is just like you go every day, you go practice every day, and you always have someone to practice with, and they're really good. Like real deep, not gonna lie. And you can learn things from everybody. Like I learned Alex, for example, when I first got here, was my roommate. And I realized that his iron shot was just outstanding. He was hitting irons like nobody else. I was just like, wow, that's sick.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you learn from everybody. You
pick things up.
And we were eight. We were a small team, so we were really close to each other.
The team's doing well, too. I mean, you came in second last weekend at Purdue, only to the host Purdue, fifth lowest score in program history, I think I read. So it's, I mean, you're obviously all playing collectively well. How does that come together? You've been here at ISU for a couple of years. Is there something different about the team specifically doing better this season, or is it just kind of right place, right time, working really hard?
Well, we hold each other accountable. That's like the main thing on our team. If someone doesn't shoot practice, well, guess what? There's consequences.
Yeah.
So yeah, we have to work. We work well. We actually enjoy. We enjoy being all together in tournament. We have great time. Even if sometimes 36 all day are like a little long, not gonna lie,
sure.
It's not easy. It's like 11 hours on the golf course, but no, we're lucky to have our team.
What are your ambitions now moving forward after college? You want to stay in golf?
Yeah, that's always been my dream. And I think it would always be my dream. I don't know where yet because it's a tough question. It would depends about a lot of things, rest of my season, sponsors later. I'm playing turn pro. I don't know if I will go in Europe or in America.
Mm-hmm.
And if I love this country, I love it.
That's awesome.
Do you have any preferences in terms of courses, either like certain types of courses or certain weather that you might be playing on in a specific tournament? Do you have any preferences in terms of what conditions you're playing in?
I actually love American courses. Like the course we played for regionals was a Pete Dye course, and that course was just sick. Like, we had, like, water kind of fistures. It was tough. It was really hard. But I love American courses. Like, you have to hit the ball high in the air. You have mm-hmm. to shape the ball a lot. It's I love it.
What's the one American course that's on your bucket list that you want to play while you're still here in America?
It's Augusta National. Like, yeah. Everybody. It's not fun, but, yeah, Augusta National.
Yeah. Play in the Masters or at least just get a chance to play at Augusta. I think we could all go for that. But I think you'd probably at least score. I know the greens are insane, but you'd probably at least get high 70s at Augusta. I think I would be somewhere in, like, the 130s if we played at Augusta.
It's not easy. It's not an easy course.
There's a funny argument that they often have on a podcast I listen to that how many shots would the average golfer need to be up by on the 18th tee at Augusta to still win? You know, how many, yeah. like how much would they still need to be up by? I think the obvious answer has got to be at least like 10. Like you're going to have to score at least like a 10 or 11 to still keep that lead.
Well, getting there is not the hardest ball. The hardest ball is to stay on the green when you putt.
Right.
Because the green is so sloppy and so fast. It's just,
yeah.
Most of us would just go out of the green and just having like a 50-yard shot after that. Like, not easy.
So being here in America, even moving past golf a little bit here for the last little bit of the interview, what else about, you know, being here in Illinois, in America, have you found interesting? Like, what do you like to eat? Stuff like that.
Well, I am a Chipotle addict. My teammates would love when I say that because I love that. I'm in love with Chipotle. I don't know why. It just tastes good.
Do they have Chipotle in France at all or no?
They have one in Paris, but they don't have queso. So really? I'm really mad about it.
Might as well not even have one.
Yeah, what?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, why would you get a Chipotle if you don't have queso?
Yeah.
That's kind of crazy to me.
Have you developed any favorite American sports teams since you've been here?
I'm not
no.
doing that. I'm trying to get better.
Okay.
I'm actually trying to, but I don't watch a lot of TV sport.
Do you watch, like, golf on TV?
Not really. No? I'm watching majors and Ryder Cup because I love that. But no, I don't watch it that much.
Is there a golfer that you look up to the mentality of, or like even the swing, or like anything that you're trying to take from the pros, or is it more just like kind of working on your own game?
Well, I love my favorite golfer is Rory.
Yeah.
He's been my favorite golfer since I was 13, actually. So I love the way he approaches the game, the way he plays. I just think it's sick.
Well, Europe took a nice win last week in the Ryder Cup, so led by Mr. McIlroy. So
yeah,
that was I'm sure you were happy for them in that sense.
Yeah. I saw a lot of Instagram video that seems to be like a sick Ryder Cup.
Yeah,
we were all close to each other. It was a great team.
Mm-hmm. We talked about it here on the pod last week or a couple weeks ago before the Ryder Cup started, and I was like, that European team is going to be hard to beat. And sure enough, that was the fact.
I mean, between Hovland, Rahm, and Rory, and stuff. And Ludvig Hedberg, he was in college like a year ago, and then he's playing Ryder Cup.
Yeah. What a season for Victor Hovland, by the way. He was insane this year.
It's crazy.
Before we wrap this up, any shout-out you want to give to anyone, any teammates or family or anything like that?
Well, I guess my family and my teammates. And, well, I would say so a special thank you to my grandma. She passed away 3 months ago, and I did a little prayer before I played my last round at Purdue. I think she helped me.
Oh, that's awesome. Great. That's awesome to hear. Well, rest in peace in that sense, and I appreciate that you still bring that into your game and still believe that that's part of it. So that's awesome. Thank you for joining us, Val. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Coming up in the Red Zone, we're going to talk about the MLB postseason here. Nice interview with Val there. As he walked out, we kind of discussed with the mics off. Somebody who was in here with him said we should have asked what his favorite line from Caddyshack was. And I was like, oh, you want to talk about Caddyshack? He said he had never seen it, so I'm glad we didn't ask. That's what we told him as he left. We said, you got to watch that movie now. Especially because he said he's so in love with the American golf courses. And I'm sure, I mean, everyone here knows that golf, as fun as it is, can be such a snooty thing. Like, that movie still holds true 50 years later. Like, it's still, like, I'm sure Val has seen that. And all these fancy courses he plays at for college, like, you know, these like country clubbers that are probably a little snooty, and like that movie still holds so true to this day. So I told him, watch that movie because he's gonna love it. We were discussing during the break if that's one of the best comedies ever, and I think that's the only sports comedy we mentioned to keep it sports related. I don't know,
Major League. I was gonna say Major League.
I'm trying to think off the top of my head like other sports comedies that are just really good. Slapshot's
I was literally just ripping on Adam Sandler, but The Longest Yard's pretty good.
Waterboy.
Yeah, that's one of the better ones.
I feel like Bull Durham's not a comedy, but Bull Durham has some really, really funny moments too. Mm. Have you guys seen Bull Durham before?
I have. I don't remember really liking it.
You mentioned it every time, and I just don't know. I love that movie.
We gotta all watch the movie together. That's a good movie.
I haven't seen Field of Dreams either.
There's a good moment in that movie where they don't want to play the next day. It's a team that's traveling. We'll get into Major League Baseball in a second, but it's a team that's traveling. It's a whole movie as a minor league baseball team, the Durham Bulls. Kevin Costner's character doesn't want to play the next day. He's kind of like the veteran. He's been in the minor leagues for like 20 years. And they get there and they want to hang out. And so they go from the hotel to this field they're supposed to play at the next day, sneak on the field, turn on the sprinklers, and just slide around in all the mud to make the field room for the next day. And he says, looks like we got ourselves a natural disaster. And then they leave, and then they don't have to play the next day because the field is ruined. So that's one of the best lines in any movie, in my opinion.
Speaking of Kevin Costner, before we move on, Draft Day, not a comedy, but the plot of everything that happens in that silly movie
I want all my picks back.
I want all of my picks back.
Kevin Costner, the king of
sports movies. Well, he's got a natural swing. Like in Bull Durham and For the Love of the Game, where he's pitching, and Field of Dreams and Tin Cup, where he's swinging a golf club. Like, he's a natural athlete. And we spent the first 3 minutes of the segment talking about Kevin Costner, but no, he's a natural athlete. He's good in those movies. I just rewatched Field of Dreams the other day, and that was kind of what I thought after watching. I was like, this guy's an actor, but he could have been a minor league ball player in and of himself. You know who's not a minor league ball player? Here's my segue. Bryce Harper.
Oof.
Oh my God, they poked the bear.
That was so much fun.
They poked the bear. Two home runs last night and stared down Orlando Arcia as he rounded second. After Arcia, what did he say? Attaboy Harper?
Attaboy Harper.
What do you guys think of them complaining, like saying like media shouldn't be posting that? Like as journalists that would possibly be in that situation, like what do you think about that?
I see no problem with it at all.
Me neither.
I understand where, I kind of understand where the Braves are coming from. Where I think it was Darnold said that their locker room, their clubhouse is a sanctuary. But you should know when the cameras are on. You should know who's in there. You should have an idea of who's in there. And either way, I think it's not even – I think the Braves are making this worse than it actually is.
What else is new?
If the Braves maybe just sat back and said, you know what, we said it, like, whatever. But the fact that they have to go and talk to the media yesterday and start crying about everything, all the antics that Harper was doing, you and I understand you're kind of defending your teammate, but it's not like he necessarily went at Arcia. I think it's just this thing is getting blown out of proportions, but it's turned into a fun little debacle that I would say in a playoffs that hasn't been super exciting as we wanted it to be. This has just made just awesome storylines for the last couple of days.
I think there's something to be said about the fact that it's postseason and not regular season, because if you have a bunch of beat reporters that have to have good relations with all the players in order to get stories, they won't do that. But I think when you're in a context of having people that cover the sport nationally, you need to know as a player, you have a different group of people listening to
you
right now.
Yes, exactly. The national spotlight's on. And it goes back to, like, everyone that's kind of defending the Braves, go back not even a month ago to when the Braves were hitting home runs on the Phillies in Philadelphia, and they're all flapping their wings around the base making fun of Rob Thompson. It's not a two-way street sometimes with Atlanta, it feels like, and I don't know. It's just frustrating for me.
And then you got people from their couch looking for their 15 minutes, like Kevin Gausman of the Blue Jays just tweeting, you know, putting the reporters on blast today on Twitter, just saying, like, this is, you know, our locker room is a sanctuary, whatever. Like, there's in professional sports, I've never been a professional sports reporter, but it's the same for college and just generally from what I've heard. There's a grace period. They give you, you know, 10, 20 minutes or whatever after the game before reporters can come into the locker room. Like, so the coach can talk. It could be relatively private unless you can hear through the door if they're yelling or something. There's a grace period where they're like, hey, they just finished the game. Maybe it was a tough loss or maybe it was a nice win. They want to be honest about it. They get 10 minutes here to just talk to their coach, maybe shower if they need to before they talk to the media, anything like that. Then the reporters, especially in a postseason game, are allowed to come in. And Gausman's point, who is a relevant Blue Jay in this situation but decided to get his 15 minutes – his point was, you know, because if you're not directly if reporter A is not talking directly to player B, they shouldn't be hearing what player C has to say over there, because then he's not directly talking to it. So that's immediately off the record. So the Attaboy Harper thing is one thing, but you're telling me if I was a reporter interviewing Bryce Harper and Kyle Schwarber said something completely out of left field about the Braves right next to Harper, I wouldn't as a reporter naturally be like, I'm recording this and I'm not going to report that. It's their job, just like it's your job to go win the baseball game. I really think it's ridiculous, and I don't think there's anything wrong with what Arcia said either, honestly. He's allowed to have some fight in it. You know, it's a playoff game. It's two teams that don't like each other. It's two divisional teams. They've never liked each other. Bryce got doubled up to end the last game. I think Bryce knew what he was doing. He wanted to get a run, but Arcia is allowed to make fun of him for it.
And that's why, like, I'm not even upset with what Arcia said. No. I think, like, he has every right to be able to say that because Harper made a costly mistake at the end of the game, and that's just how baseball is. But it's just the matter of that the Braves are blowing it out of proportion with some of their players trying to defend Arcia, and the media as well is kind of just, like, and even other players like Gausman. They're just kind of changing the story and making it seem as bad as possible, almost.
So, guys, how do you feel now? Three of the four teams set and ready to go for the NLCS, or two of the – or no, it
no,
is three.
Three.
I am
now,
That's three. And so this is the only game that we have left until the championship series round. Like, do you feel like the Phillies put it away tonight? Do you feel like – that's the first question. And second question is, what is the difference between – whichever team wins, what we get out of, say, the Phillies between if they have to play a game five and get no rest really at all, or if they get some rest, win game four, have a little bit of time off, and then play on Monday.
I think both Phillies pitching and Atlanta's pitching are better suited for this playoffs than the Dodgers. I think they'll give the Diamondbacks a run for their money. I think the Dodgers really got exposed as a weakness this postseason in their pitching, and it could have gone either way. You could have seen really good stuff from Lance Lynn and Bobby Miller and, of course, Clayton Kershaw, but you didn't, and the bottom line is that the Diamondbacks made quick work, and now they have a break. But to Braden's question, I think the Phillies do put it away tonight because I think the bank is going to be rocking. I think that's probably the best home field advantage left in the playoffs, them in Texas. When it comes, now that the Twins are eliminated, the best fans left are them in Texas, and that could very well be the World Series.
I mean, Phillies could be yet another team that's a sixth seed in the playoffs entering the championship series as well.
Yeah, and I've been talking about it all season long. I think Philly was kind of destined to return, and I think they're wasting no time here in the postseason so far. They are just such a fun team, and it's just so fun for the game. Like, I wasn't mad at Arcia's comment, but he poked the bear, and now Bryce is staring him down as he runs past second. There's nothing wrong with that. It's cold, if anything. You don't hear Bryce getting on the mic and roasting Arcia. It like we talked about on the pod last week, Bryce's character is completely his perception in the public eye is so much different now, but he still has that edge that people hated him for previously, where he was kind of a showboat. He still is that competitor. And I think now that we're viewing it as a competitor, we should have been like, why weren't we viewing him this way his whole time with the Nationals either?
I think it's just more the fact that he's just not the kid in the spotlight anymore. He's now more the chiseled vet that like still has that kid swagger.
Yeah.
And I feel like it was more because it was maybe because he was a little bit of a hothead when he was younger, you know. He would get in fights, he would yell at umpires, and that's still obviously there, but it's so much more different now.
He's batting helmet.
Yeah, he's this chiseled vet that just hits home runs.
DHs only, one MVP is a DH, literally.
I want to say something, though, really quick, and I know you guys were talking about Dodgers pitching, but as much as Dodgers pitching was bad, those games were winnable. I think the biggest reason for why the Dodgers lost is because they got one hit out of maybe the greatest 1-2 punch in MLB history.
Yeah. Well, Betts said, what do they say to the Diamondbacks? Like, if you're coming into our house, we're playing good ball or something like that.
Yeah,
like,
he was talking to Carroll on his podcast like, you're going to have to go through us, and that's going to be tough.
And then Mookie and Freddie combined for 1 for 21?
1 for 21.
1 for 21. And I love both those players, too. Except for the season that Ronald Acuna had, either of those players could also been the NL MVP, and Freddie Freeman and Mookie Betts. But that's I like that Dodgers team. They were likable for once. This is a separate side note, but the Dodgers fans were really making me mad on Cody Bellinger's recent Instagram post yesterday. I don't know if anyone saw, but I was getting into huge arguments with them. But because all the comments are, this is another tangent, but all the comments are, come back to LA, come back to LA, come back to LA. We love you back in LA. They booed him out of town. And then you got Dodgers fans telling me that he was laughing or they're laughing and it's all a joke. No, you booed him out of town. And now that you booed a former MVP and a champ out of town, and then now that he kind of figured it out again with the Cubs hitting staff, they want him back all of a sudden? No. I don't know if it was down with the Cubs, but he's going to San Francisco, if anything.
I don't want to talk about Cody Bellinger's impending free agent, but I do want to ask you guys the question. We could potentially be entering the third team that didn't have a bye moving on in the playoffs to the championship series, other than the Astros, who had a break. What do you guys think of the playoff format?
Well,
I have my opinions on it, but... I have my opinions on it, but I want to hear your guys.
Well, first off, I want to correct myself from probably 5 minutes ago when I said the Phillies were the 16. I was not looking at the bracket. It's the Diamondbacks that were 16. But the we've seen last year. Yeah. We saw the Rangers come from a 5 seed. We've seen a lot of big upsets. We've seen a lot of, like you said, teams that got byes. Baseball. It's kind of it's very sensitive in the way that you manage a baseball team, because if you give a bullpen too much rest, they're almost just as in trouble as if you don't give them enough rest. And so when you have these teams, but like the Braves were apparently doing like simulated games and stuff throughout the week, and they still looked really sloppy. They could have been eliminated if they didn't get things going late in game 2, but game 3 they came and laid an egg and lost all that momentum they had. So, it's hard to really say that you get much of an advantage for getting past that wild card round anymore. And I also just feel like, did we really get much good baseball out of the wild card round this year or last year? I feel like we didn't.
No. I'll tell you what, I think maybe it should potentially be tweaked so there's less off days in between that wild card series and that championship series. But, I mean, if you go ask those teams that got eliminated in the wild card, if you would have asked them, would you guys have rather had a first round bye? I guarantee you 99 out of 100 teams are saying, yes, we would love that first round bye.
Yeah, they still
want
the bye.
It's just more the way that you have to show up. And when we look at the teams as well that, like, did get eliminated, it's Baltimore, who has just not good pitching.
And they're babies.
Exactly. Astros, they showed up because they are Yeah, they're Astros. Veterans at this point. 7 years in a row, they're in the championship series. The Dodgers, we already talked about it. They just didn't show up. Bad starting pitching as well as their stars didn't show up. And now we'll see what happens with Atlanta tonight. I think they just ran into a buzzsaw that's the Phillies. So I think anyone complaining about this playoff format is just searching for answers, and more the people that are louder about it is the people that had the number one and two seeds, and their team are ultimately going to end up being eliminated.
Baseball is such a funny game. It's, you know, the classic saying, momentum is the next day's starting pitcher. They ran into the buzzsaw, the Phillies. Yeah, I mean, I think it would have been twofold if the Braves were the ones who played in the wild catchers, then went to Philly. Like, maybe they'd be up 3-2 now, mm-hmm. or 2-1 now. It's just who's hot stays hot, right? You're looking at a White Sox team in 05 that was okay. I mean, they won 99 games, but they were solid, but they weren't going to roll through the postseason, right? They lost one game en route to a World Series. Or you're looking at a Nationals team in 2019 that was at one point 11 games below 500, who went on to beat the Dodgers, beat the maybe the best Astros team of those 7 years, and won the World Series. I mean, if you looked over that 2019 Astros roster, it was about as good as this 2023 Braves roster.
Cole and Verlander at the top.
Yeah. Oh my God, they were insane. And it's just baseball. More than any other sport, I think football's the worst with that. Football, the best teams win. For the most part.
No.
For the most part.
Basketball
and football. And worse is subjective, because you don't, like, it's, that should be kind of how it is. You know, the best team should get rewarded. But baseball is the worst, and if you think of worse as the other sense, any team can win. That's why for so long on Ben and I's podcast about the Cubs for the last couple weeks, we were talking about just get in. Because all it takes is to get into the playoffs, and you could be the Arizona Diamondbacks, who have won 5 straight, and are now in the NLCS.
But, I mean, for you guys to have missed the playoffs, it has to feel a little bit better for you guys knowing that the team that got in instead has actually been worthwhile for putting in the postseason.
I guess, but I'm just thinking that could have been us.
It's a little more painful, yeah.
Just like, oh, you know what I mean? Like, it's like seeing somebody else, like, you know, do something with your, like, go on a nice ride in your car. Like, oh, that was ours. Like, we had that spot, and now they're zooming away in our Ferrari. When we come back on the Red Zone, we're going to do Pick 6 with John Rosen. You're listening to the Red Zone. Welcome back to the Red Zone. Mikey Fernelli, Braden Fogerson, Ben Hootie, joined by John Rosny of the WZND News team. Last week we had Colleen Holden, who was one of our producers of Second Look, and this week we're matched back up with John Rosny. How's Second Look been so far? Give us your quick elevator pitch about why we should be listening.
Second Look, you know, if you want like a quick recap of some of the major stories that have happened over the week in a clear and concise format, definitely tune in at 12 o'clock noon on Sunday. So,
and I think you're going to have that interview we just did for Red Zone today on that show. I think because there's a sports segment in Second Look with interviews, and more often than not, it'll probably end up being whatever we do on Red Zone, because it's nice to kind of relate to a human level to athletes in interview sense. And I think Colleen and I were talking about that. Pick 6 is the name of the game. We pick 6 NFL games. Ben is actually the one who decides. He sends them to us on Thursday morning, and then by that night, at the end of the show, we make our picks. Do you have the standings pulled up, Ben?
Yeah, you want me to run over them?
Yeah, you run it past
I don't have the standings, but do you want me to go over our records from last week?
Yeah, go over our records from last week.
Mikey, 3-3. Me and Fogerson, 2-4. Back to our losing ways. Steve winning, as always, 4-2. And the guest, also 4-2 yet again.
It gets back to it. Steve's going to have a terrible week to lose at this point. It's insane. So the full standings are 23-7 for Steve. Just a historic start. Through 30 games, 23 wins. The guest, as John pointed out, he has a record to uphold. 19-11. Yep. The guest has done really well so far this season. I am at 16-14. Hudsy, 14-16. And Berger Ferguson, 13-17. So we move on to tonight's Thursday night football.
It was. He's shaming me up.
Me?
Yeah.
I said we both are losing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I said me and you continuing our losing ways.
Yeah.
I read that Ben was in fourth and Ferguson was in fifth, and then Ben gave Fogerson the Bryce Harper stare down. No, but moving on to Thursday night football, we got the Broncos and the Chiefs. Oh, man.
Attaboy.
Oh, man. The Broncos and Chiefs. I mean, is it pick 5 this week? Are we just going to all say it at once who's going to win this game? No, John, you're the guest. I'll let you say your first pick for this.
Yeah, we'll start off easy with this one. This one's going to the Chiefs.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I think everyone's going to. Ben, you're going to say the Chiefs?
Yeah, the Broncos were trouble as soon as they walked into Arrowhead tonight.
Oh, God. Yeah. She's not. Is she even going to be there?
Yeah, she is going to be there.
She didn't go last week. I thought they broke up.
Nah, they're good.
No, I think tonight they're gonna have a very swift victory, you know?
Ooh,
John, yes. You can't poke the bear with Ben's Taylor Swift puns. Fogerson, what do you think?
As I said in the group chat, it's hydrogen bomb versus coughing baby. This is just going to be a horrendous matchup. And it's a good thing that the NFL decided to have a bad matchup for a week where everyone's going to want to watch baseball instead.
Fair point. I might be watching the Phillies and Braves tonight instead, Chiefs. Let's move on to the Vikings and the Bears. Oh, the boy. Bears. The Bears who are back. The Bears. The Bears. They win their first game since October 22. The Bears. They're back. They're back. Fogerson's yawning, but they're back. The Gill Stadium curse is over. They're back. Ben, start us off.
Can you come back to me?
Like, the Bears back? All right, I'm going to say the Bears. I think the Bears are going to keep having some fun. I think the Vikings should probably win this game, but I want to pick the Bears because I'm being a homer. And the Vikings have looked slightly disappointing so far, right. So that's enough of a weak spot for me to pick the Bears.
Come back to me. I'm going to pick the Vikings this week, just for this week only.
All right, that's
if they
that's
win
a lie.
After this,
that's
I'm
a
picking
lie.
The Bears for the rest.
No, don't join the bus when it's already moving.
Well, I picked
jump
the,
on the bandwagon now or not.
I was gonna pick the Bears
not.
Last
you gotta
week.
Get on the ground
I was gonna pick
man.
The Bears
exactly,
last week.
Exactly. And invest. Be an angel investor.
No. I was gonna pick the Bears last week and I picked the Commanders, and that ended up working in our favor.
No.
So I'm going to.
You had no
I would
say
rather.
To that.
I would rather lose my pick six win percentage than like I'm superstitious about these things. Like I don't care if my pick six win percentage is bad if the Bears are good. So right, I'm going with the Vikings.
John.
I was originally thinking Vikings. But look given that Justin Jefferson is now out, IR, this one, I think it's going to the Bears.
And John, by the way, is in our fantasy football league. He did draft Aaron Rodgers in the first round, unfortunately. But John, keeping up with who's on the IR, I love it. That's a great pick, too. Fogerson.
Vike me. I mean,
Skull?
The Bears aren't there, you know. They have a good offense.
What are you talking about? The Bears aren't there. They're back.
I don't know. I feel like sometimes I don't pick based on my fantasy team as much as I should. Because if I pick whatever team I have more fantasy players on, it's a win-win when I pick them to do well. But every time the Bears have been good, I haven't started them in fantasy or vice versa. I'm picking the Vikings. I don't know. We'll see
how
that works.
You're hedging yourself, basically?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I respect that. Steve went with the Vikings. He's a Lions fan. He had to pick between two evils. Let's go Bengals and Sea Chicken. Seahawks and Bengals from this pick. I'm thinking, I don't know. I'm thinking this one on the spot. I was going back and forth. I think I'm going to have to go Cincinnati. The Bengals kind of, like, I know I made my Bears are back jokes, but, like, the Bengals actually seemed to kind of make something work last weekend. Like, Burrow was actually throwing passing touchdowns for once.
Yeah.
And didn't Jamar Chase have three?
Three.
Yeah. So I'm going to go with the Bengals. The Seahawks offense is really fun, though. I'm liking the over in this one.
Yeah, I've been going back and forth with this one, and I think the Bengals are back, and I think they're going to make a run in a kind of weak AFC North, but I really like the Seahawks offense, and that defense is they got that kid from U of I, Devin Witherspoon, drafted in the top five.
Yeah, he played real well
He's
a couple
really
weeks ago.
He's really good. They have a good defense. They have a good offense. I think Seattle is – I don't think they're getting talked about enough. I'm going to go Seattle. Mm.
You know, the Hawks, I think they got good win numbers on paper, but I feel like they've been kind of playing against a little more of the lower end of the distribution teams. For me, personally, I think Bengals are going to go with this one here.
I'm changing my mind from what I had earlier. I'm going to pick the Bengals.
Is that a sweep?
No.
Ben is excited because he thinks
so there's
that
a point on the board. There's a point on the board.
Yeah. I love that.
So Steve took the Bengals. So yeah, Ben's the only one that can have any lateral movement in that.
Could be good or bad for me.
Yeah, could be.
I don't care about my win percentage. I don't care about my win percentage though. It's already done. It's toast.
No, you're two games
I'm
below.
Kidding,
you're
I'm two kidding,
games
I'm
below.
Kidding,
you're like the Nationals. You just have to spark it.
Fight.
All right, let's move on to the Commanders and Falcons. Wow, that's an interesting one. I think that'll be so bad it'll be good. Because I think both those teams are, like, fighting decent.
They're frisky.
Like they're fighting. They're
frisky, both wishy-washy.
Yeah. Yeah,
they're
both
either
wishy-washy.
Or, like, either really good or really bad on any given week.
Steve's going with the Falcons, as am I. I did not like what I saw against the Commanders and Bears, obviously. It's the first Bears win in over a year, so the Commanders must be a special kind of bad, and the Falcons have been a bit friskier than the Commanders this season.
Yeah, these are two gross teams when you look at them on paper, but they could potentially both make the playoffs.
I love when it's two mid teams. Below mid teams, just like the Bears and Commanders. Like that might have been one of the best Thursday night games yet, just because it's like they're playing at the same level. Like it's not going to be a blowout.
I picked this one because it's a coin flip. I feel like for all of us.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the Commanders, even though they lost to the Bears last week. I still kind of liked what I saw out of their offense, and I feel like that defense isn't as bad as it was, like, as it usually, like, they just looked horrific against the Bears.
Riverboat Ron needs a win, too.
Yeah, he needs one badly, or that job's gone. Give me the Commanders.
That 20-40 loss against Chicago, though, I mean, for that stacked up against the Commanders and the Falcons, being able to just eke out a win against the Texans last week, too, I think definitely they got a chance. I'm going with Falcons.
Can you refresh me on who picked what?
Ben?
Falcon. Mikey with the Falcons. Me with the Commanders. Steve, Falcons. John with the Falcons.
We can't let Ben get another movement.
Commanders.
They're trying to pass me up. They're trying to pass me. I'm not that much.
I'm so afraid of that pick, but.
Okay. Well, I think we all know what we're doing here.
Yeah. Could we all agree there's a pick four?
There's bloodbath here that's.
Seriously. The Giants are. Maybe I think the NFL or ESPN ranked them this week as the worst power ranked team, which is shocking considering you have the Bears, you have the Panthers, you have some of the worst teams in the league, and they still think this Daniel Jones Giants team that was apparently they struck gold last year. They were on the cusp of something great with a new coach and all this nonsense. They're so bad. The Bills are going to take care of that.
There are some NFL teams in really, really bad positions right now, and I frankly don't think there's – as much as we could rip on the Panthers, they did draft a young franchise quarterback this year. I don't think there might be one worse – in a worse position right now than the New York Giants, considering how much money they're paying to Daniel Jones and the fact that their coach brought him to the playoffs last year, and it's kind of all of a sudden just flipped. I think maybe the only team I could think is worse is Denver, but –
But even then, Denver's been a bit friskier than the Giants have.
Yeah,
it's just
this is
it's
tough.
The Giants have just laid down
Who's
and died
the
multiple times.
Win even?
The Cardinals. Remember, the Cardinals were up and they came back by like 20. They barely beat one of the worst teams in the league. Who, by the way, has been very frisky under Gannon. Remember do you have your fire in your belly? Did you take the bus? we always quote that on the show. Remember that? Remember the quote from the coach? He said on the first day he was like. What was it, Ben? You have more of a photograph memory than I do.
Well, the one thing, he went up to Buda Baker and was like, this is you on the football field. and for people, obviously, this is audio, so I was doing...
your fingers were moving.
Like, it was like rockets. That's what he told Buda Baker, and Buda Baker just looked at him and smiled, and he was like,
"All right,
you guys got to fight with that fire in your belly."
How'd you guys get here today? Did you take the bus? Did you drive? Do you have that fire in your belly?
Yeah.
It's a great quote. All right, moving on. Monday Night Football, last game.
So Bills across the board, right?
Yeah, Bills across the board, right? I think we all agree with that, yeah. Cowboys and Chargers. This is another tough one. Ben, good picks this week. I know you had to take Monday Night Football, but very good picks this week. All of your picks that you made that were like games you didn't have to include, you did it on purpose so you can have movement in the standings.
Yes.
I respect it. This one's going to be another split, including myself and Steve. Steve went with the Chargers. I'm reluctantly going with the Cowboys because I don't really like either of these teams. Both teams are incredibly disappointing. But the Cowboys got so embarrassed on Sunday Night Football, last weekend. I think the Cowboys are going to have to bounce back just like they did when they took their first loss this season. I don't think they're a bad team by any means. I just think the 49ers are an absolute buzzsaw, as Ben put so eloquently in the last segment. I'm just going to go with the Cowboys and pretend I like that pick. So Steve, Chargers, me, Cowboys.
I'm right there with you. I think they have to bounce back. Like they need to bounce back or else the warning signs are all over that Dallas facility because there might need to be some serious change. Maybe not the trade deadline necessarily, but you got to look forward. I think these are two disappointing teams, but I like the Cowboys coming out on top in this one.
Like you said, Mikey, they're both kind of ranking a little lower in the standings. They're both pretty neck and neck, though. They're just they're very close.
A lot of close games.
I know, yeah. But overall, I think the Cowboys are going to face a little bit of a tough defense from the Chargers, but I think they'll eke out the win there.
Both of these teams have not yet won against a team that would be impressive to beat and have really only been able to beat teams that aren't great or inconsistent. And I just feel like the Cowboys have a little bit more than the Chargers. And I also feel like the Chargers don't have as high of expectations, in my opinion anyway, in terms of what they can do. So I would pick the Cowboys, but not by much.
I'm changing the Chargers.
Really? That's a first.
He wants to be the odd man out.
He wants to be the odd man out.
He's
okay.
Trying to go against the flow.
I was 50-50. Swimming upstream.
I was 50-50, and I like Justin Herbert better than Dak Prescott, so give me the Chargers.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, you can defend it all you want. You just want to move up in the standings.
Yeah, but like once again, this is one of, I picked 50-50 games, and if Braden was going to go to the with the Chargers, I was going to. It's bad. It's bad game planning. But I want to go with Chargers.
I thought we were together on this. All right, up.
Never
this
forget Jimmy Garoppolo has two career championships. Thank you for listening to Red Zone, Mikey Kelly, Braden Ferguson, and Ben Hootie.
Three of the day, and it's good.
Curry owned the league last year.
Oh, and sure. Personal awards and numbers.
We'll take off with you next Thursday at 6. For now, you can listen to any past broadcasts on WZND.com. Touchdown in 3, 2, 1.
Agreed, I'm good, bye.